Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Gates, How Erdic Research Affects You. I am here with Dr. Amanda Treitinger, and she is the Research Hydraulics Engineer with the Coastal Hydraulics Laboratory. And we're going to be talking about engineering with nature, or EWN, and nature-based solutions for a better and more resilient world. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And everybody, just get ready because you're going to learn a lot about engineering with nature. So, Dr. Treitinger, what is your role at Erdic?
So, I am a research hydraulic engineer at the Coastal Hydraulics Lab. My background is in oceanographic engineering and as well as civil and environmental engineering. So my research focus is on numerical modeling of storm surge events. Like if a hurricane's coming, I help estimate how much wave action you're going to see or how much flooding you might see given different infrastructure alternatives and designs. My role within the Engineering with Nature program, the EWN program, is as the assistant program manager. And in that role, I get to see everyone's research and get to see what everyone's doing in the program and help organize different researchers, different PIs, and get them connected across the Erdic and across the nation to subject matter experts that are doing the best work in the fields that research is happening in.
Fantastic. So you pretty much, you went into your background. So what steps did you take to get where you are, and what is your relationship with the community?
So I started as an environmental engineer in my bachelor degree. So I loved math growing up, and I wanted to save the world, as we all do. So environmental engineering seemed like 1 and 1 equals 2. That's what
right.
I should do. But while I was getting my degree, I saw a lot of hurricanes come through Florida and the Gulf, and I knew I needed to change my projection. So I dove into coastal engineering and oceanographic engineering so that I could kind of bring that environmental aspect into helping provide information to communities that were at risk to those events. Then I came to Erdic. I did more of that. I saw EWN. I saw that that was this kind of combination of all of the above. And I found myself as the assistant program manager and getting to touch all that work. And in this community, I've never lived in a small community, first of all. Vicksburg has just been a treasure to get to know. In my community, I love to volunteer whenever those events happen at the, you know, the Strand or at Martin's. And
are you an actress?
Oh, gosh, I wish.
Okay.
Shout
I didn't mean
to
interrupt,
David.
But yeah. I was wondering.
David Boone, if you need an extra, I'm there. I've been trying to get myself there, but I would love to be. But in the meantime, going to the Strand and watching the great actors this community has. And isn't it just so cool that Vicksburg to me is just the land of opportunity because if you want to do it, you can. If you want to be an actress, you can. You don't have to move to Hollywood. You get
right.
to do all of the things you want to do. And I love, getting a cup of coffee and going up to the attic and seeing the most eclectic art I've seen anywhere. You know, I've always been really into art. I like to draw, I like mm-hmm. to doodle and paint. But going to the attic and seeing the southern twist on these different modems of art has been really cool to get to know.
And how they get repurposed.
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite artists, I forget her name. I try not to get something every time I go to the attic, but I always get something of hers. And she takes bottle caps and,
right.
yeah, and redesigns them as art. And we have lots of her pieces. Yeah. Yeah. It's been really, I love this community so much. So I don't know what my involvement is other than person that goes to all the shops and appreciates.
Well, you get appreciated around town, I'm sure. This is a great infomercial for Vicksburg. Thank you so much.
I love Vicksburg.
That's great. So what is EWN and why is the subject important to our listeners?
So engineering with nature is the focus on the creation of sort of holistic system-based approaches to solving infrastructure problems that are provided by a very large range of hazards. So I'm going to focus on flood for Vicksburg mm-hmm. because That's historically something that we have to be worried about living this close to the Mississippi. But engineering with nature is research into solutions that look 50 years into the future and kind of bring this interdisciplinary design to infrastructure solutions. So if you have a flood, you don't just have a flood wall to protect yourself from that flood, you also have this redundancy of vegetation before it, or you've expanded your floodplain. So it's like taking a macro look, or you take a step back and look at the big picture that feeds into your small picture problem. And another part of engineering with nature, in order to do all that, is we reach out beyond the borders of the ERDC, beyond the borders of USACE, and we make sure that we involve academia, we involve different non-government organizations, the community, if we can. Mm-hmm. And we kind of bring the, like I said earlier, the subject matter experts in these features, in these designs, and bring them to the locations where we're looking at providing solutions for. So it's just system-based approach to our traditional infrastructure problems to provide solutions that are forward-looking and holistic in a way where they consider ecology, mm-hmm. geomorphology, hydrodynamics, and then additional benefits to the community, like aesthetically pleasing. Maybe bring tourism to your community, right. Provide fishing or different industry support. So it's they're holistic system-based designs, and EWN provides the research and demonstration projects to move the practice forward.
Awesome. Awesome. And see, and I understand that. So so that if I understand that, that means anybody out there listening can understand.
Oh,
okay. So what are the four major elements of EWN?
The engineering program focuses on four elements where we want to make sure that our research and our implementation are all science and engineering, profoundly based in science and engineering. So we want to make sure that our science is strong, and our delivery of those that science is also strong. We use natural processes to maximize the benefit of our projects, those co-benefits I mentioned, and thereby reduce the demands of our resources when implementing, but then also on operation and maintenance, so O&M later. And we want to minimize the environmental footprint of those projects while enhancing the quality of that project and its benefits. We also look to broaden and extend the base of benefits that are provided by our USACE infrastructure projects and include sustainable economic, social, and environmental practices in the system of the design. Okay. And lastly, we use science-based collaboration to organize and focus interests of our researchers, but also our stakeholders and our partners, and we reduce this kind of social friction or political resistance, and which ultimately ends up in project delays. We reduce all of that while producing more broadly acceptable projects throughout the nation.
That's great. That's great. So how are USACE districts and divisions committed to the integration of EWN principles and practices into projects?
So this is really exciting. We have five USACE district proving grounds, mm-hmm. and those proving grounds have committed to working with the Engineering with Nature program, in that if they have a research project or if they have a infrastructure or a project that they see that there could be research involved in it, they'll mm-hmm. reach out to us. We'll get some of our researchers to work with them and kind of make the best outcomes for their project in the EWN sense, but also share our research, they share their data, and we build upon that project kind of as a case study to prove that this R&D can work, mm-hmm. but also iteratively go back to the R&D and say, hey, maybe you need to focus here. And we learn from those proving ground projects. And that way, you don't get done 3 years with a research project and then look back and see what works. You're able to do it as in parallel as the project is demonstrated.
Right.
Recently, we've had these five districts. We've moved to a proving ground division, the South Pacific Division. And because we've been so successful with those proving grounds, we want to look at how to implement across a division now. Mm-hmm. How do we bring those success stories, the lessons learned from the failures, and implement on a division scale? So we've been working with SPD, and it's been really awesome. They've talked about how to kind of create workflows on how the districts have successfully implemented the EWN research. Mm-hmm. And they've even provided some ideas on creating things like a GUI that can automatically find an EWN project and help you pull out the data that was used there so you can implement at your district or your division. Mm-hmm. So that's been really exciting to have these proving ground divisions and districts. And we've seen other divisions want to get on board, and we're able to just say, go talk to them. It cuts out the middleman.
Right.
So
right.
ERDC isn't the bottleneck, but we're kind of the connecting node to get people to just move forward and implement and achieve.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Exactly.
Okay. So what have been some project milestones and lessons learned in the implementation of EWM measures?
So there's been quite a few of these. I would say one example is the Swan Island, which is in the Chesapeake Bay. It was an island we created due to kind of the convenience of a navigation channel that Baltimore District was dredging just for typical maintenance. And instead of dropping that material off into the open ocean, they were able to utilize it and restore an island that had been eroding for many years due to sea level rise and other actions within the Chesapeake Bay. And they restored this island. And there were two really huge milestones and lessons learned here. One was that you need to create a monitoring and adaptive management plan for these natural-based solutions, because mm-hmm. vegetation is not concrete.
Right.
And we've all had a houseplant. Right. And you're like, houseplant, I'm doing everything I can to take care of you. The internet says you want sun, I put you by the window. Internet says you want more water, I gave you more water, and it died. Right?
Right.
But then you get another one.
Yeah. How'd you know?
How did I kill a pothos? I don't know. But then I've got, since then I have 5 pothos, and I found the place that works for them. I moved them to where they want to be. Turns out I need to water them less. Anyway, so same thing goes for the vegetation on these features, right?
Right.
You learn what the vegetation wants, and there is a lot of modeling. There's a lot of information you can collect before you plant. Things change. It's nature. It's the wild. So you have to plan. We've learned through Swan Island, because we did see that where we planted low marsh actually was high marsh. And where we planted the dune features, that's not where the island wanted the dune. So we went back after a year. We looked at where sediment had just naturally moved due to the Chesapeake Bay system. Mm-hmm. And we replanted. And we have been monitoring. We monitor the vegetation yearly. We take submerged aquatic vegetation samples, we take sediment samples, we've taken water elevations, wave samples, all of the above. Mm-hmm. We go collect that data quarterly, but we go to the island yearly to look at that vegetation, and if we need to, we replant. And I think it's really important with these type of features to build that monitoring and adaptive management plan into your design so that you're not surprised by that. Your stakeholders aren't surprised that where you place material, that material has moved.
Right.
Because it will. So we learned that we need to create these sort of thresholds that we look to and plan for and communicate to the community so no one's surprised when we go back out there.
Nobody likes surprises.
We didn't just learn this. We also documented it.
Right.
So for the Swan Island project, we are actually, as of today, we've published the Swan Island Monitoring and Adaptive Management Tech Report. So other people can do this too. But we also have the International Natural and Nature-Based Feature Guidelines on our website for all different types of features that talk about steps 1 to 14 on how to implement a feature. And about step 9 is how to build that monitoring and adaptive management plan. Mm-hmm. And other things like how to plan for risk, how to communicate to your stakeholders that there is risk and there are going to be planned surprises.
Right.
So hopefully that takes the sting off it. The other thing we learned with Swan Island and with other projects mm-hmm. is collaboration is key. Mm-hmm. Like you said, teamwork makes the dream work.
Absolutely.
With that project, we collaborated with many highly collaborative project here. We talked to NOAA, the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Association. Mm-hmm. We talked with Fish and Wildlife, Maryland DNR. We worked with the USACE district. So Swan Island happened when we were under COVID quarantine, and we weren't able to get our people out there to collect that data. Mm-hmm. Before we had gone under quarantine, ERDC had taught Fish and Wildlife and NOAA how to pull data down off of our monitoring equipment, mm-hmm. and in a way put the power in their hands. So even though we weren't able to ship up out there and collect the data, the project continued. We were able to lean on our partners and work with them. And moving forward, we've been creating these models to kind of predict the vegetation mortality, so hopefully less surprises. But when we found that the prediction wasn't quite lining up with what we hoped it would, we talked to NOAA, who goes out there every month, mm-hmm. and we said, this is what we're finding. Does this make sense? And they were like, oh, this is why. And we were able to just work with our partners and fill in the gaps where the research wasn't doing the job. And I think that's a huge lesson for scientists in general. If you are looking at your computer output all the time and you think, oh, that's weird, 20 meters of storm surge, that's as tall as a skyscraper. Mm-hmm. I bet it's true. No, go out there and look at the water. You know, go right. out and see the tributaries, see that the tide is different over here from over there, and maybe that's what's going on. So that's what we were able to do with our partners, and I can't say that that's where we learned that was the milestone, but man, is it a great showcase for how collaboration is key.
Awesome. I'm Annette Kirkland. Beyond the Gates continues in a moment. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Don't miss a movement in every direction. Legacies of the Great Migration at the Mississippi Museum of Art. This exhibition asks 12 artists to trace their personal stories through the Great Migration and explore their family connections to the South. On view now through September 11th with free admission on Sundays. Learn more at msmuseumart.org. This message sponsored by the Mississippi Museum of Art, the Mississippi Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
This year, don't just go back to school, conquer school. Get CableLink's broadband up to 150 meg internet and unlimited data together for under $25 per month. We make it easy to switch. For less than $25 per month, get speeds up to 150 megs and unlimited data for 1 year. Everything wireless in your home connects best with true broadband speeds and no buffering. And now add AMP for the best whole home Wi-Fi experience, installed by our technicians for only $7.95 per month. There's no credit check, no money up front, and no deposit. This year, smart starts at home. CableLink's broadband up to 150 meg internet and unlimited data under $25 per month.
This offer will go as fast as summer did. Don't miss out. Get all the speed you need for school. Visit cablelinks.com/connect or email support at cablelinks.com to order now. Some restrictions will apply. Offers expire without notice.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gates. You're listening to News Talk 107.7.
Well, if you're just tuning in, I am speaking with Dr. Amanda Treitinger, and she is a research hydraulics engineer with the Coastal Hydraulics Laboratory at ERDC, otherwise known as CHL. But she is talking about engineering with nature, EWN, and nature-based solutions for a better and more resilient world. So we're going to continue on. And what's the difference between natural and nature-based features and nature-based solutions?
An example of how this works is the whole, one is a square, is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square, right?
Right.
So
you have really good analogies. I appreciate those because they make sense to me.
I don't know how to communicate without analogies. So NBS, natural-based solution, is sort of the system as a whole. It's something that takes care of the whole maintenance, refers to the sustainability and management and use of natural and nature-based features in the process of tackling that social, environmental challenge and solution. And those challenges, they include issues like climate change, water security, water pollution, food security, human health, biodiversity loss, and disaster risk management. So that's NBS. That's the rectangle.
Okay.
So inside the rectangle is the square. Mm-hmm. That's natural and nature-based features. These are features that are designed as infrastructure that is redundant, heals itself, is natural-based. Right. So if you talk to an ecologist, they would tell you natural infrastructure existed before we took it as a term. Natural infrastructure is like a forest that right. exists. Humans didn't touch it, but it provides infrastructure to the surrounding ecosystem.
Okay.
Natural and nature-based features are trying to emulate that. They're trying to copy that. Use the... I said collaboration is key. Mm-hmm. Mother Nature, first engineer, right?
Right.
We're learning from her.
Okay.
She didn't publish a lot of journal publications.
In fact, not any.
So is that right? Did you Google Scholar that? Okay. Yeah, so we're trying to learn from Mother Nature as an engineer and mm-hmm. emulate those natural infrastructure that existed as engineering infrastructure before without human interaction. Mm-hmm. And we're going to steal that. She didn't publish. So we can't cite her. We're
right.
going to steal that information and put it into our infrastructure features. So NNBF, natural nature-based features, are things like island creation. Mm-hmm. You use material that you dredge, you create an island. That island protects from storm events. Everybody behind it supports the ecosystem, creates like sediment in the system that wasn't there that helps things like submerged aquatic vegetation. Mm-hmm. Submerged aquatic vegetation help fish grow. You have more fish, you have more fishermen, you have economic benefit here.
Right.
So island creation, let's see, wetlands. We see that a lot in Louisiana, New Orleans, has been using a lot of beneficial material to create and restore their wetlands. Reefs off the coast, we build artificial reefs. And mangroves have been really successful in the south. We have like rubble mound revetments in the north, and then in our fluvial systems, in our rivers, we have these floodplain projects to expand and provide a space for the river to expand out when we do have flooding events. So we have a lot of levees along the Mississippi River, for example. We have these projects called levee setbacks that just take where the levee is located and kind of set it back mm-hmm. so that. And if we're able to, we do a little feathered technique, add some vegetation on top. Mm-hmm. And this just allows for when you have the peak flow in the river for that water to expand out without causing any kind of devastation.
Right.
Because the Mississippi River was long, it meandered a lot, and then humans used it as a resource. And we kind of put it where we needed it to be to create the most economic value, which is great. But if you think of it as this like long tube that used to be kind of diverted and stretched out, we basically made it smaller, and that created less space for floodwaters to go, and the waters, in fact, move faster.
Right.
So we're trying to, without changing that economic value, and like create those spaces for humans to live alongside the river and get value from it, we're trying to, where we can, emulate that mother engineering aspect and create floodplain expansion for those extreme water events.
Right. Wow. Okay. I'm going to say that a lot today. Wow. Okay. So why is it important to apply the EWN principles to mainstream projects?
Let me tell you.
Okay, good.
I'm so excited about this part.
Okay.
So it's really important because the community deserves it.
Right.
So it's important for us to provide the best products that our nation deserves. And with an EWN project, when you add NNBF, natural nature-based feature, to your infrastructure, where you were getting risk reduction before from mm-hmm. a traditional feature, you are also now getting more benefits. So you are getting a social benefit where if maybe you had just a levee, now you have levee with vegetation with a little walking path. Mm-hmm. That creates a space for the community to go to.
Right.
If you have you have ecosystem health benefits, that's great for biodiversity. That's great for your community. You know, save the bees.
Right.
But also that also comes back to that social benefit where you have more fish in your rivers. You have more diversity in your fish. You have more bird watching is huge right now. We've seen all of these NNBF feature locations where we've put these NNBF in. Birds flock to it.
And, really?
And I have a few friends that are keeping their spreadsheet of sighted birds, and I know that they benefit from that. But then you also have this redundancy in your risk protection. So you have a second layer of risk reduction when you add an NNVF. So if you had one flood event come through and maybe you met a threshold where your traditional infrastructure failed, you have a follow-up with the NNVF. Or long-term, a natural nature-based feature, if designed right, will rebuild itself from that threshold. Mm-hmm. So you're also decreasing your operation and maintenance cost, which of course helps the community. So these co-benefits, these social, economic, ecosystem health benefits are really great for a community to thrive, but also I really think aesthetically, the communities we live in and we love and we go to every day deserve to have this next level infrastructure that just thinks about them mm-hmm. on the day to day, because we build these infrastructure and then we walk away.
Right.
But if you build it in a way where it's beautiful and living and thriving, then even when you walk away, you have left a legacy that the communities can appreciate.
Fantastic. Okay, so how many, this is an important question, how many team members and partners are part of this program and what are their roles?
Now, I know I should have this number quantified and on the top of my head, but alas, I do not. So I'm going to do my best to give you other values
okay.
that will suffice.
Okay.
So at the top of the Engineering with Nature program, we have our national lead, which is Dr. Todd Bridges. Mm-hmm. And then we have the program manager, Dr. Jeff King. Mm-hmm. And these two, with their own team of super supportive researchers and planners, they created the initiative for Engineering with Nature 11 years ago.
Okay.
2 years ago, Congress said, that initiative's a good idea. Let's fund it. And that's when the team really started to grow.
Okay.
So on our kind of leadership level, we have, I think, maybe 10. But then that 10 has three each that support them
right.
in some way or another. And then researchers, we have about, as of this year, we have funded 50 research tasks. And each one of those tasks has 3 to 5 researchers on it.
Okay.
We have included in that number our projects that we have through our network for Engineering with Nature, which is a collaboration of academia and NGOs, non-government organizations, federal agencies outside of USACE. We have this network for Engineering with Nature where we have heavily partnered with academia, and we have really strong relationships with the University of Georgia, University of Florida, Oklahoma University, and Arizona State University. And why I mention that is, of course, they have a whole team of their own, but the goal of that research is underlying one of our key focuses is education. So I would say we have however many universities, however many organizations, and then under that, the curriculums they're creating.
Okay.
So it's not my fault that I can't quantify this value.
Because it's still growing.
Yeah, it's still growing.
It's growing right now.
Yes, as we speak.
Well, if you're just tuning in, I am speaking with Dr. Amanda Treitinger, and she is with ERDX, Coastal Hydraulics Laboratory, and she's a research hydraulics engineer, and we're speaking about engineering with nature and nature-based solutions for a better and more resilient world. And so here's something super, super fun to know. The USACE EWN program and NBS received major support, as you spoke of a while ago, when President Joe Biden issued Executive Order 14072, strengthening the nation's forest communities and local economies on April 22nd of this year. What does this executive order mean for the program?
Clearly for the program, it means that there's more opportunity in EWN, right? There's focus, there's attention, we can bring, for the past 12 years, there's been ideas of what we want to do. This support means that it's what we can do. And yeah, on April 22nd, on Earth Day, when the president
signed. That was Earth Day? I didn't realize.
It was Earth Day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was very cool and felt very, it felt very warm inside to know that on Earth Day, that's when this came out. But yeah, that executive order had a companion document actually called the Compendium of Federal Nature-Based Resources for Coastal Communities, Tribes, and Territories, which is something we're really focusing on, is the traditional techniques and making sure of the communities. We do focus on maybe less the communities that have gotten less attention, so social equity, environmental justice, but then also we've been working a lot with the tribes because they make up a big chunk of this nation. Mm-hmm. But so in that compendium, they referred to the USAIS EWM program specifically and the website that's associated with our products that are highlighted really prominently within that document, which is available online.
Okay.
As is our website, of course. But yeah, it's a great illustration of EWN just reaching across all levels of government and making a really fundamental impact. That's been the goal, is to do really good science at ERDC, to create really great partnerships, take that science, apply it. Mm-hmm. But then we don't want that information to die at ERDC. We want it to get out beyond the castle borders, beyond the different levels of bureaucracy, change policy if we need to, change practice, change the standard of practice, and make sure that we are sharing the information we learn and then putting it out there so that we can then have an impact on this community of practice and make sure that the lessons learned, the cool information we're finding, that really awesome research gets shared with this nation and applied at this nation. So that's why it was really cool. And of course, it was very exciting to happen on Earth Day. Wow, what a fundamental save the world impact we were having.
Right. And so isn't there, if I've read this correctly, the White House, they have a committee?
Yeah.
Okay.
They do have a committee, and they quite often ask Todd Bridges to speak at the Resilience Committee. Mm-hmm. And we've been working a lot to create these nodes, these network clear paths between the community and our researchers. We're actually going to put a workshop together here in September, right around the corner.
It really is.
Where we're going to bring headquarters, we're going to bring that committee in, and we're going to bring our researchers and actually some folks from the districts. So I mentioned the proving grounds. Mm-hmm. We also have 4 district practice leads. 2 of them are coastal, Elizabeth Godsey and Danielle Szymanski, and 2 of them are fluvial, Eddie Brower and David Crane, and they're river engineers, fluvial engineers. And we have been using them a lot to expand the practice at their districts. We're going to bring them to that meeting too.
Okay.
So it kind of has every level of impact at this workshop that we're going to have.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, it's the fact that this executive order came out really shows that the tireless effort that EWN has spent on the Hill has
it paid played off. Out.
Yeah.
It played out. That's always
good. There's a lot of requests for information I had to put together and send up.
Well, and you say information, you're referring to a website. If people want to learn more about what we're speaking about, where's the website at?
This website has everything.
It really does. I read the website to develop these questions.
Yeah, I could tell. The engineeringwithnature.org. So engineeringwithnature.org. Yeah, you can also Google it. It's the first link that pops up. We made sure of it.
Awesome.
But yeah, this website, I Google it. I look it up every day to answer these requests.
That's why it has such high rankings, because you're doing this every day.
Oh, it's just me. I'm the clickbait.
That's right.
Yeah, I look at that website a lot. And so I'm just going to talk about what you can find on that website.
That'd be
if
great.
You're interested. So we have information on things I've mentioned here, like the proving grounds, those practice leads. But we also have on there a podcast.
Okay.
Which is really fun. I listen to it, and it's my job. So that says something, right? On the weekends, in my free time, I'm listening to my
You're
job.
You're dedicated.
Dedicated. So, and then we also have, I mentioned the Network for Engineering with Nature. If you, at any level, if you're a practitioner, if you're in middle school, you want to learn more about how to do EWM, we have the Network for Engineering with Nature. There's a tab on the website where you can go to what we call the Noon Network for Engineering with Nature. You can learn more about all of the research tasks that are happening through there, different workshop events. But also, we have a webinar knowledge series. Mm-hmm. So monthly, third Thursday, we put out this webinar that has one of our experts throughout the network that I've mentioned. They just give a lecture for 45 minutes on a certain topic. Mm-hmm. and you can ask all the questions your heart desires for the last 15 minutes and get to have just this one-on-one with them. And it's kind of like attending like a lecture or a talk at a university. And you can sign up for that series on the EWN website, engineeringwithnature.org, and have these little reminders sent to you on what the topic is. So maybe you don't want to tune in this month, but you want to tune in next month. It's kind of really nice for people that don't have the time to look for something all the time. It comes to you.
Right.
Also on the website is all of that research that I mentioned. We have a research tab, both current and archived through the years. There's four, you hit that current, you can see four different tabs worth of research to see those 50 research tasks that I mentioned. And then we have a Engineering with Nature blog, Engineering on the Road. So finding, you know, we didn't create the idea behind EWN.
Right.
People have been doing EWN for years.
Right.
And we have this blog that finds EWN throughout this nation. And you can see how it's working and maybe also see how some, like the LA River, is working on a restoration project. How you could maybe apply EWN in your backyard and how, and the blog looks at places that could use EWN and probably are looking into it right now, as the LA River is. Yeah, and you can also get connected. You can give, you can go to this website, you can go to the About tab and find out more. You can ask to be added to our mailing list. And, oh, last thing is we have these really pretty atlases, Engineering with Nature Atlas 1 and 2. That show up to 60 projects in each book. About a third of them are USACE, and these are national and international projects. And they're just these nice little coffee table books that help with the communication of NNBF, because it's a new topic. You know, it has quite a few different names, and NBS, NNBF, natural infrastructure. This book helps you navigate that kind of difficulty in showing maybe a stakeholder or a friend what NNBF actually looks like, and that it is pretty and it is something nice for the community. So that's just a few things on the engineeringwithnature.org website.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, so to wrap up with our last question, what do you want people to remember from this valuable conversation? So much, right?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. I think EWN, while it's sciencey and researchy and infrastructure engineering, I think EWN is a story of how to work with people and how to work with the people that are in this nation already doing their best and collaborate and work across walls and boundaries that are not really, they're not there, but we've created them. And I think EWN is a great example of how you can cross those boundaries. Just shake out your hand and say, hey, I'll offer some data if you offer some analysis, right? Like, I just think EWN is beyond the implementation of these features and really a success story on how to collaborate and use the strength of the research and the practice of engineering and planning and design and architecture and ecology and biology and all of the above that we have already in motion. There's momentum behind each one of those areas throughout this nation. They're just being applied differently throughout the regions. And you bring those people together, put them in the same room and say, do good work. And why not? I mean, you don't have to do EWN to apply that in your field. And I think if you want to, though, you can find the success stories of how to do it in your field at EWN. But that's what I would love for people to walk away from this with, is just, it's beyond the technical. It's really just about working together for a more brilliant, beautiful, well-deserved future.
That we can stay in a lot longer.
Correct.
Yes.
Nice. 100%. I would love to be here longer.
Well, and as people are probably going to get tired of me saying this, but each person that has been in the chair that you are, I always say, you can't teach passion, and it comes automatically, and you can't teach the way you automatically have this passion for what you're doing, and it shows. So I just want to thank you for what you do for ERDC, for the nation, for our world. So I appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you. I feel very lucky to get to do what I'm passionate about.
Awesome.
And I love this chair and this place. And thank you for doing this for this community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, everyone. Well, we want to thank you for listening. And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Amanda Treitinger. And again, thank you for listening to Beyond the Gates, How Arctic Research Affects You. And we'll come back at you next week. Have a great day.
Yay.